Beyond Who's Living at the White House, a reminder that the retreat from globalism is global. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. You've been hearing about tonight's first state dinner of the Donald Trump presidency with French President Emmanuel Macron and his spouse as the guests of honor, lamb, jambalaya, and trade. Marketplace's Erica Barris reports that Macron has a lot on his agenda.
Item one, steel and aluminum tariffs, specifically ensuring that the European Union doesn't have to pay them ever. The current exemptions expire May 1st. Susan Ariel Aronson is with the Center for International Governance Innovation. She says Macron,
I think he hopes to speak for Europe and many other countries who want and who deserve that certainty in trade.
Aronson says trade stability is key to a global economy. Europe exports lots of steel. Hit it with tariffs, it'll strike back, says Sebastian Malaby with the Council on Foreign Relations.
The Europeans have already said that they've got a list of countermeasures ready. It's going to be tariffs on about $3.4 billion worth of American exports to the EU.
Exports like Harleys, bourbon, and blue jeans. If Macron doesn't seal the deal, soon after the China and crystal are cleared from tonight's dinner, German Chancellor Angela Merkel arrives with the same steel and aluminum agenda. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
Erica is via station WESA. Bankers meet your regulators. Regulators meet your bankers. It's the American Bankers Association holding its annual Government Relations Summit this week in Washington. One topic, how smaller banks are restructuring to try to get away from tougher Federal Reserve regulation. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer explains that.
Some banks are restructuring themselves, so they're not under a holding company, basically a parent organization for a bank and its divisions. Why? Because if you're a holding company, you have to spend extra time and money to satisfy stringent Federal Reserve regulations, says Anat Admati, a finance professor at Stanford.
So you could say, oh, I can be a bank and be regulated by the bank regulators, and they allow me to do enough of the things I want to do.
And she says if they break away from their holding companies, they're just banks, regulated by agencies like the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, or OCC. Candace Workman-Nonis is with Resources Global Professionals.
You know, I hope that we're not going to go back to the days of regulator shopping, right? One regulator being easier on banking financial institutions than another.
But Workman-Nonis doesn't think the OCC would necessarily go easier on banks. And she says federal regulators started coordinating more with each other after the financial crisis. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
I should do the financial numbers. The 100 share index in London is up 0.3%. Dow and S&P futures are up 0.6%. Now, crude oil is up near $75 a barrel in Europe and is up near $69 in New York. That is getting high again as the world economy expands. Just as you count on Marketplace for reliable, in-depth news and information, we're counting on listeners like you to invest in what we do. The more people who support Marketplace, the more that we can do to raise economic intelligence across the country. You'll reap the rewards every time you listen, knowing that you're helping Marketplace make people smarter about the economy and why all this matters. And here's the thing, your donation now will be matched dollar for dollar when you give today, thanks to a generous challenge from our friends at Candida. Become a Marketplace investor at marketplace.org, and thanks for making a difference. We've been through an era where walls came down, the Iron Curtain, borders between European countries, trade walls in North America and Asia. Now the walls are going up, and this is not just one wall from one U.S. president. This bothers political scientist Ian Bremmer, founder of the Eurasia Group, a political risk consulting firm. His brand new book is called Us Versus Them, The Failure of Globalism.
The global economy, of course, is doing better than at any point in the last since 2008 financial crisis. But the fact that the economy is doing so well and the average person is so angry, first of all, should be really concerning for you when you think about what it's going to feel like politically in these countries when we have the next recession.
If you spend time out in the real world with people working for a living, people do not feel that they have a great future. They don't feel that their kids are going to grow up in an even better place.
They certainly don't. And that makes them want to vote to break things, right? And we've seen this in the United States. I think there is a sense among people that can't stand Trump that if you just get rid of Trump, things will be okay. But people made very clear that the entire establishment, the idea that the United States was going to support the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that the U.S. was going to allow in large numbers of refugees, the idea that the U.S. was going to continue failed wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and Syria, none of these things were okay to the average American voting. And they voted for Trump and for Sanders or didn't vote at all in the same way that we got Brexit in the UK, in the same way that Merkel took it on the chin in Germany and in France, where the globalist won Emmanuel Macron precisely because he ran against the establishment parties and set up his own. He's coming across a globalist and getting destroyed in the polls as a consequence. So literally, you can get rid of Trump. But I mean, all of the Trumpism in the United States is real and is coming for us, right?
But anger isn't a policy. So what's the alternative? I mean, capitalism tends to be global, likes the borderless world. I just was reading a piece the other day that some younger folks don't think that socialism is a dirty word. Does that address some of the problems of angry Americans?
The alternative is that you actually look at these people and say, we're going to invest in improving your infrastructure. We're going to invest in improving your education and dealing with your healthcare. It's going to be expensive. It's going to take a long time. And I do think that there are experiments that are happening along those lines, but not at the national level. But let's be clear. Technology is going to displace a hell of a lot more people than globalization ever did. So this will get worse before it gets better.
Ian Bremmer's new book, Us Versus Them, The Failure of Globalism. He's also founder and president of Eurasia Group. Ian, thank you.
David, a pleasure.
Tomorrow, a magazine founded on the principles of freer trade is also wrestling with all of this. It's a conversation with The Economist magazine's editor-in-chief, Marketplace.org, or our podcast if you miss it on the air on Wednesday. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.